Welcome to The Athlete and the NARP. I'm Jenna Daly, and I'm the athlete.
And I'm Claire Fenton, and I'm the NARP. And if you don't know what a NARP is, then you're one too. The 14th episode of The Athlete and the NARP. Today we're going to be discussing sports betting and the rise of it since it started becoming legalized in states about 6 years ago, and the way that we feel the widespread legality of it has detracted from the sports viewing experience. So this one we're definitely going to have a bit of some opinion on. I think we both feel similarly about the way sports betting has taken over almost and infiltrated the normal sports experience, even for people that don't bet at all or aren't really involved in it and kind of like us don't really care what the over under or the money line is for any given event. But honestly, at this point, it just feels like something you can't kind of escape. And we've talked about or mentioned in previous episodes how some sports leagues and high-ranking sports officials usually take a really strong stance against gambling and associating with it. In our Vegas episode, we went into a lot of detail about how the NFL in particular was very, very, very against having a NFL team in Vegas because of that, because there didn't want to be such a strong association with Vegas, which is obviously the center of gambling and casinos in the U.S. And then suddenly, within like a couple years, they reversed that decision and threw a team in there. Just to kind of give a little bit of background on how we got to this point with the legality of it. So in May of 2018, the Supreme Court struck down the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, which basically meant that states could set their own sports gambling laws as opposed to it being a nationwide yes or no. Currently, sports betting is legal in 38 states and D.C. It's not legal in Georgia at the moment. We were going to talk a little bit maybe later about our, if you want to call it a moral stance on sports gambling, whether or not we think it's right or wrong. Clearly, a lot of states think that it's okay. For me, at least, I'm like, well, if it's illegal in some states, is there something like dangerous or maybe some people feel like immoral about it that wants it to be illegal? And I think at least for me, the biggest problem with sports gambling comes from the marketing and the long leash that these companies are given to kind of just market to oftentimes a pretty vulnerable audience. Gambling can become addictive. I think that's something we all know. It's a very, very slippery slope. And that's not just me saying that, like there are studies and research that have shown that it's a very, very slippery slope from just getting involved, you know, like with just one small bet to suddenly like you can't stop. You lose some money, you try to win it back just by kind of doing the same thing. These gambling companies are profitable for a reason. It's because they know how to stack the odds against you. Like you are not smarter than these companies. They will always win. They will always make money and they can ensure that they do. So it's really a losing battle. New Jersey, they legalized sports betting in 2018 after the Supreme Court ruling, and they've had a 277% increase in calls to their gambling helpline since then, which is an insane increase to have to deal with. And they're saying that it's mostly young men betting on sports that's part of that increase. Clearly, I think it's like it's become a bit of a problem and it's a little bit dangerous. And I'm not really sure why people are not, and by people, I guess I mean lawmakers, are not, don't seem to care as much about enabling this type of addiction as much as they would with anything else that we deem like substance abuse, for example.
I actually think there's a very easy answer to that, which is money. We always
end up talking about money.
We do. We really do. But it's very difficult to talk about sports and not talk about monetary values. So just to put into perspective and quantify what you are talking about, I found a stat that said in June of 2018, the nationwide sports betting handle, which is just the amount wagered, was roughly $310 million in that month. And then by January of 2024, the monthly handle was actually $13.9 billion. So that's an increase of 4,400% in, what, 5.5 years? That's a crazy, I mean, to go from $300 million to almost $14 billion. Yeah, you can't even really, like, comprehend $14 billion. So that was a crazy stat. And then to kind of explain some of the background of why maybe this Supreme Court decision came to be, casinos and gambling companies have been just lobbying like crazy for decades. It's been over 90 years since Nevada actually legalized sports betting, so just for Vegas, and it's only been in Vegas for that long. But in the last few decades, they have spent like roughly $35 to $40 million a year on lobbying, which, to put in perspective, is over twice as much as gun rights and gun control groups combined, which I feel like is one of the ones that you hear about the most. So to spend $40 million on lobbying, I guess I'd kind of hope at that point you do accomplish what you want to.
That's fair, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it really comes down to money. I mean, we talked about it with the Vegas episode. There weren't really teams in Vegas until all of a sudden 2018 came around and sports betting is legalized, which it was always legal in Vegas, but it became not a differentiating factor to Vegas. And so because it already had all this infrastructure and like ways to focus on betting with sports, then all of a sudden I think people and leagues realized like, oh hey, we can make a lot of money here, and so let's go move there where they already know what they're doing.
In our previous episode, we talked about this NIL stuff and how this rule comes about, and it's kind of just like a Wild West and like free reign, and there are no rules, and everybody just tries to like scoop up as much as they can and have that self-benefit. And I feel like there's kind of a parallel between that and this, since this passing of this Supreme Court ruling, where I don't think there's been enough trying to rein in these sports books and these sports betting companies. Like, for example, the American Gaming Association updated a marketing code for these companies in March 2023 that said that they can't use risk-free language in their marketing. So all they did was switch to saying like something like no sweat or like a similar phrasing, which essentially just makes the rule null because it's exactly the same thing. Like, you really haven't done anything. They just like use a loophole to get around and downplay this element of risk that is involved with gambling. And it's targeting in particular, like I kind of talked about with the helpline, like young men. Even though you have to be 21 years old to gamble, like I personally know people who have like
I know plenty worked,
right,
of people
just
who
work
are
their way around that
illegal books
exactly
and everything
and work their way around that age limit when they're younger. There was actually a survey done by the College of New Jersey in which 75% of respondents said that they were introduced to gambling between the ages of 6 to 16, which is kind of scary. I don't know. I mean, gambling, you know, it could be anything, I guess, from, you know, just like hearing somebody talk about it. You know, I don't know what the exact parameters for this study were, but I guess the fact that so many people are exposed to it at some level, like you're talking like, again, 6-7 years old. I think some of it has to do with the way that this marketing has, like I said, just infected almost the average sports viewing experience, because now you'll watch just any professional sports game, but I think in particular football, and these sports betting companies like DraftKings or PrizePicks or any of the others are official partners of the league. They're official partners of sports teams, and that's how it's presented, like after the commercial break or right before the commercial break, like this is brought to you by DraftKings, the official partner of XYZ. And so you're there and you're watching this and it's like, how have we gone from taking a stance against this and saying we never want to associate with it to officially partnering with these companies? Coming back from commercial breaks, oftentimes there will be like, you know, the commentators will go over a graphic with some statistics on it that's talking about the game. But I think now I'll see, instead of just talking about normal stats, they'll have a graphic up with like the betting lines or the over unders and things like that for these stats. And it kind of takes me out of the viewing experience because I'm like, why is this up here? Why are we promoting this? Why are we putting this on the normal broadcast? Why has this become a normalized part of the way that we consume sports, is that we always have to care about, again, the betting line or the over under or who's projected to win and all of this. Again, if you are gambling on these games and you have money on the line, obviously you care. But for everybody else, it takes me out of it a bit. And it's a little bit irritating to see that there when it's like, I could not care less about this.
I'm the same way. I mean, I was saying to you before this that I think it's really changing the way that people are watching sports. And yeah, for someone who doesn't gamble and then also I technically can't gamble with the NCAA, it is weird to be around people if you're watching a game or something and they're very, very into sports betting and gambling on the over-unders and like waiting for these people to hit the numbers or whatever and talking about like the spread and the money line. And I'm just like, this is overwhelming. But also, when I watch sports, a lot of times it's just to watch the actual game and like the physicality of the players and just the, you know, the sportsmanship and things like that, just different aspects, which I guess to each their own, you know, like people are not going to feel the same way as us all the time about watching. But I think it inserts almost a different tension into watching sports that didn't exist previously. I think a big example of this, honestly, is the way that people are starting to view players and coaches. And a lot of my research that I was looking at was really talking about on social media after games and things, now that betting is legal in a lot of different places, people are starting to attack players for not hitting these bets and not hitting their shots and things. And so there was multiple examples that I'm forgetting the names of the people because I didn't write them down, but they said that there was actually a lot of like racist comments on their posts or things or like tweets, like subtweeting them saying, I don't even want to repeat it because it was so awful that I can't believe anyone said it. But they're starting to attack these players and start to view them as kind of like pieces in this chess game of winning this bet. And like they really only are starting to value them because of betting. And the article also talked about a coach, I think it was an NBA coach, I can't remember, saying he will hear people in the stands like screaming at him about their bets and things, and he's like, this is crazy. Like, what can I do?
That's kind of where it's become, like you said, it's taken on this life of its own where organizations, leagues are forcing this on us, that this forcing this intersection of gambling and sports to be normalized. And again, we just kind of roll with the fact that, right, athletes are going to get abused because of these over-unders, or, you know, we just have to sit through watching, you know, these company sports books get promoted by leagues and teams and things like that. And I think one example that really gave me pause, I think it was last week, was this post that ESPN made. So they have a whole section of ESPN that's called ESPN Bet, which is also another one of those things where they have this ESPN Bet side, which obviously people who want to gamble or will follow that to stay on top of that. But now they've actually, like, when I go to just check my normal sports schedule or like see what's coming up, like they'll just have the over unders under all the games. And I'm like, I don't like, and that's not something you can turn off or get away from. It's not a setting. It's just like what they do now. And I'm like, I don't want to see this. Like, I don't care. I'm just looking for the scores. So that, again, that's another example of how they've tried to just embed this like in your normal consumption. But ESPN Bet has its own Instagram. ESPN has its own main Instagram. And sometimes to promote like their sub accounts like ESPN Bet or ESPNW, they'll do like a joint post. Like ESPN will do a joint post with these other accounts so that it shows up on like the main ESPN feed and also the ESPN Bet feed. And there was this one post that ESPN Bet made that ESPN, the main account, partnered with. And it showed a football player like intentionally grounding himself toward the end of the game to not score a touchdown. And the header above this post essentially said something like, player XYZ intentionally grounds before the end of the game so that the score does not hit the over and it like stays in the under. And basically, I think it was just poorly worded, but the wording, when I first read it, the wording implies that he did it on purpose to not hit the over, which is just super irresponsible for ESPN to be posting and promoting and not being cautious. Because that's like Jenna mentioned, like athletes and anybody involved in professional sports, there are very serious consequences for betting on your own team, betting on other teams. Like we saw what happened with, for example, Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter earlier this year. And that wasn't even, allegedly, that wasn't even Ohtani involved. It was a massive deal, like a federal level crime. And for ESPN to be posting something like that really carelessly about a player that, again, I don't know for sure. I'm pretty sure it was just misworded, but it reads as if this player intentionally did not score so that the bet would not hit. Like, that's just honestly unacceptable from an organization that big with as many resources as they have. And again, I think it just goes to show how much betting has permeated sports culture, but also how carelessly people treat it, how carelessly the promotion of it is handled when there needs to be more scrutiny around it. And people don't seem to want to do that.
What drives me crazy is just the hypocrisy around the whole thing. And so you have these logos and names of betting companies plastered everywhere. You have them, like you said, you can't turn it off. You can't get away from it. I mean, I go to a decent amount of sports games and I see these names just pop up everywhere. And they're the digital ads now. Like, they're just so many places. Even when we go to sports career fairs, you have usually multiple betting companies or companies associated with betting there, which is pretty funny to me. So you have all of that and everyone's like promoting it and is like, oh, you got like fans should do this, they should do this, like be involved with this, blah blah blah. But then you have these crazy strict rules and punishments for the athletes that are actually playing the games and everything, and they're getting suspended indefinitely from and ruining their careers because they were sports betting. And so I don't necessarily disagree that there should be like strict consequences, especially if you are gambling on the league you're in and the team you're on. I think that's very difficult to kind of prove that there's no collusion or anything. But I disagree with the vast amount of promotion that they talk about and kind of like the liberty that they tout with being able to like bet on what you want and win what you want and like take all that money and run with it. And then they like crack down like crazy on these players.
More so than like we've talked about for domestic violence. Yes. Or actual violent crimes against
people. Exactly. Yeah. So that's where I really have a problem with sports betting, because in general, I think it is great, and there are instances of where states can actually take all the profits from that and like fund other things. There was one state that actually was able to fund, it was 1,100 teacher salaries specifically through the revenue from sports betting. So I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, you can fund that into different programs that can actually benefit the state and its citizens. So I think that's really cool. It's weird. They're like separating the athlete from the actual betting in a way where they're like, you can view them as kind of like I had said, the pawn in your idea of betting and gambling, but they're not allowed to participate. Like, as soon as they're involved in it, they're not like the other, they become like your group of betting, then all of a sudden it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a problem with that.
Not necessarily everybody who gambles will become addicted, but there is a very, very real risk of you becoming addicted to gambling. A couple of studies that I've looked at have said that like every $1 somebody puts into sports books results in your household invest allocations going down $2. So it's that doubled effect of like however much you put into sports books, double that is coming down out of your allocations and your investments. Obviously is not ideal. Especially
not great.
No, especially if that number really starts to add up, as it often can. And then there's this other concept of like, now that we have sports books like so easily accessible, essentially like on your phone, you can make bets and wagers like within seconds instantaneously. That just like enables this to be something that people, you know, just have on like whenever they need their, I mean, I'll call it like a fix, like their gambling fix, like it's right there for them. And another study that I looked at said that the longer people have to wait for their gambling outcome, the less likely they are to face that addiction or to gamble more. So like previously, before we had like all these apps and this instantaneous access, if you were doing it like through an actual like bookie, like physically on the books, you had to wait longer for that to come through or to figure out what was happening and get your money back. But now obviously with the digital stuff, it's instantaneous. And so you don't have that delay of that, like you have that instant gratification, and it makes it much easier to kind of get downward into the into this spiral. I equate kind of this gambling addictive aspect and this enabling of it by sports organizations. Like, I like to compare it to cigarettes, which maybe people, or nicotine, which maybe people will say is like an exaggeration or that they aren't comparable, but in some ways they are. Like, no sports team currently would be caught having a vape or a cigarette company as one of their main sponsors, or partnering with them as like the official sponsor of whoever. So why are they okay with doing that with gambling? Why aren't we having at least some more level of scrutiny over these two different things? And same thing with alcohol. Like, teams typically don't have alcohol brands as their sponsors, and maybe that's not necessarily because of the addictive aspect of alcohol, because alcohol is more prevalent than like cigarettes or nicotine or other drugs like that, but it's this idea that there is some type of taboo against using drugs and alcohol as part of your team sponsorship, even though they're probably as prevalent, if not more prevalent, than sports gambling. But why do we not treat gambling the same way? And why do we give gambling, like, not even just allow it, but give it, like, the spotlight and, like, the center stage, and have, like, whole leagues be partners of sports gambling companies? I think that's where the disconnect comes for me, because there's always this taboo against, like, again, like I said, these substance abuse or, like, drugs and alcohol. Nobody would ever want to be associated with that, but with the gambling stuff, even though there is this very real tangible evidence that shows that it is addictive and that addiction is growing fast, people don't seem to have that same moral take on it, if you will.
Yeah, it's a fascinating point, just this whole idea of almost like this moral exception that people have in their mind, and you can separate that from many other things. It's definitely a weird concept to think. And maybe in part it's because it's new and flashy, and so everyone's trying to rush onto the scene and everything, particularly like large companies. And so ESPN with their ESPN Bet, I was looking because they're owned by Disney, and Disney's like a family company, you know, but now that they have ESPN, they have to have ESPN Bet because everyone else is doing it. So you kind of get grouped into this, and which is interesting, like reputational wise, but I think that is part of it. It's that it is so new, so people are still trying to figure out the best way to manage it, and everyone, it's trendy. Like, sports betting is trending right now. So I think it'll continue growing for sure. It's not something that's going to fade out, but I think maybe the buzz and the hype surrounding it might fade a little bit, and once it becomes truly normalized, then I mean, people like you and me are kind of just going to have to accept that there will be stat lines and over under predictions and things on our screens. And so it'll just become very normalized. But one thing that we had talked about was the F1 team. And I think it's like Stake Kick Sauber F1 team, I think, is like the full name. Honestly, there might even be more to that. But Stake is a sports betting company, and so in a lot of the places that F1 races, they actually don't allow sports betting. So I find it really interesting when they go to these places, they can't even use their full name, and so the whole marketing aspect, it's odd to me. You have countries that actually really do care about it a lot, but then we have kind of almost another Wild West scenario where in the US it's kind of like, let's just slap on a logo to anything and everything that we can put. And like you had put a note that like you hear FanDuel all the time and like podcasts you listen to and stuff. And that's true. Like I hear them, and I hear DraftKings in many other places. And so those top ones are just everywhere. And so it's so interesting that that's not the case in a lot of different places in the world. But one thing that you had talked about was that I'd like to hear you explain more is kind of like the sponsorship deals in the Prem League and all of that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think I'm glad you brought up the international aspect of this, because I think sometimes we get so accustomed to things that we think they just are the norm and this is how it right. is. But then you look internationally, which I had never really done before, and you find out that, yeah, it's not the norm for sports betting to be this ubiquitous. In the Premier League, which is the top league for international club soccer, currently 35% of the front of shirt sponsorship deals in the Premier League are betting brands. This isn't as much in American sports, but in the Premier League, like, their jerseys will have, like, sponsors on the front. For sometimes it's, like, a pretty big part of the jersey. Like, Barcelona has, like, Spotify, and it's, like, all over their stuff, for example. So, like, the brands are, like, a really big deal, and part of that, I think, is because these soccer teams, they don't have, like, salary caps, and you can just use whatever money you raise to pay players and grow teams. And so the rich teams often stay richer and the smaller teams stay smaller. But any amount of money you can get, you can take. And so it was surprising to me to see that, like, 35%, that's quite a lot of the sponsors are betting brands. But going into the 2026 to 2027 season, which I guess is a couple years down the line, those types of deals will be banned. And so that's around $72 million of revenue right now that teams are going to have to figure out where else they're going to get them. It is something that is possible to do in leagues here. Like, you could just say, yeah, none of this. But teams here and leagues here don't seem to want to do it. And La Liga, which is the main Spanish league, they've had already had that banned. France, Germany, and Italy don't have, there's not necessarily a rule against them, but they're not super prevalent. There were only, like, maybe a handful of teams that have sports betting orgs sponsoring these teams where they're making money from them. There is this taboo, I think, for some people, where you have these gambling sports books on your jerseys or as part of your team name. Like, I'm sure for Stake Sauber, it's awkward to, like, have to go to places and not be able to use your full name. At the same time, when you're in sports like F1, too, where it is, like, there's no salary. I mean, there is to some extent, but, like, the range of what these teams can make is massive. So they need all the money they can get as a lower field team. It's like when you just need money and, like, these sports betting organizations can offer it when nobody else can, it does put you in a tricky spot. So I can empathize with that. But at the same time, I think that's where it comes back to the leagues and, like, the main overseers to put, like the Prem is doing, put down their foot and say, nobody's getting this money. You got to find it somewhere else. And they used to have alcohol brands, the Prem did, used to have alcohol brands on their jerseys until the 2017 to 18 season when they banned them. So there is this precedent of, like, these things become taboo. We don't want to potentially have something, have this marketing and this sponsorship that we're enabling if it means that young kids are exposed to this early and think it's just normal and become addicted later in life. Like, that's something we just don't want to be associated with, and it's not something that's necessary for us to be associated with. And so we're just saying nobody has it, and we just don't want to have it in the sport.
I think it also goes back to changing how I said it changes the way you look at sports. And I think soccer is a very big heritage sport and very traditional, and so you have all of these kind of long-standing values with a lot of teams. And so then when you're introducing betting and sports betting, that's very new and different, and it's definitely placing a monetary value on it when I don't know if soccer is necessarily viewed in that way a lot of times for a lot of European teams. And I mean, it's just very different over here. But when I think of the Prem and, like, La Liga and a couple other teams, like, I don't really think of their value unless we're talking about, like, Chelsea and everyone they're signing, but
if you know, you know.
Yeah. But I think of kind of the historicness surrounding a lot of the teams and what they have succeeded with and things. So I think then once you bring in the betting, that's changing it, and so you're starting to place, okay, this player's worth this much and whatever. And it's like, okay, the manager can do that. They can, GMs can know who is valued at what. But as a fan, I don't think that's what you should be doing. You get different things when you watch something like that, and I don't think that that's in the long term satisfying. I think you talked about the instant gratification. When you're watching it in the moment, it could be really cool if your bet hits and you're like, oh my god, I just won this money. But but after that, then what? like, that's it. That's all you're focused on. So you're not even really focused on the game and everything. And so I don't really think that that – it's just not protecting the traditional way to watch sports, which I think is really important.
If you need to be betting on a game to find it interesting or enjoyable to watch, I think that that's a problem. And I think that that's kind of where that this addictive aspect comes in, where it's like, right, we're not talking about, now you've turned it into something else. I'm also not really an adrenaline junkie person, or I don't really love that feeling. So this is also me talking about something I don't really enjoy anyway. I'm too nervous and anxious to be betting on things. But if you're someone who does enjoy that rush and you're getting it through sports betting, I mean, I don't see how that's any different from like taking a hit of a drug or anything like that. Like, you're placing a bet, you're getting a rush, you're like making it more exciting to watch for the moment, and then it hits and then it fades off and it's like, oh, I want to do it again. Like, that's what drugs are for. Like, that's what, you know, to some extent, like, alcohol and drugs are for. And obviously, if you can do that in moderation in a way that's healthy, awesome, like, good for you. That's great. And same thing with sports betting. But again, like, when it's kind of infecting this viewing experience and turning it into something else, which you're not really watching sports anymore. It's not about the sports. It's about the money that's on the line. Yeah, it's become something, yeah, completely different. We can't choose to have the betting not be part of our viewing experience anymore, which I think is what is frustrating. And we both have F1 teams. We both have, like, F1 fantasy teams, mm-hmm. Which we don't have any money down for. But, I get it. It is kind of funny whenever we're watching a race and I watch the driver I just switched onto my team this week DNF into the wall.
Yeah, and I'm like, negative points.
Damn it. Like, I shouldn't have put them on. And I'm thinking about that. I'm a little frustrated. Or at the same time, it's exciting if somebody wins that I just switched onto my team. I got them double points for. I'm like, yes, let's go. Like, that's fun. But it's also not something that's front of my mind, and F1 doesn't have, like, the betting lines or anything like that on the screen during their broadcast. And so it's not something that's top of my mind when I'm watching the race. It's something I maybe think about after, or as, like, a joke whenever something like that happens, and I'll, like, put a text in our group chat. But for, again, it's the part where it's prominent and it's, you're being forced to think about this. And that's the part that I think is, like, unethical, because if you want to choose to do gambling and kind of like do that on your own time and have that be part of it, great. But for people to have to like process and sit through and watch and like be exposed to the stuff when that's not something they're interested in or something they don't want to do, or they're maybe young and then they grow up just thinking this is normal and this is what this is because this is what the NFL promotes and does, like, for me, that's a problem.
I think it's a fantastic addition to sports. I think, like you said, it's very fun and exciting. I do not think it should be the predominant feature of any athletic event.
Yeah. No. And especially for, like, when we're talking about, like, college sports and college events, because that's often where I see these betting lines on ESPN. Like, when I'm just looking to see what college games are on, they'll have the betting lines under these football games. And I'm like, these are, like, these people aren't even allowed, like you said,
right? Which is so funny.
Not even allowed to do the betting.
Yeah,
or they're too young. Like, they're not even 21. Most of them.
Right. Yeah. The NCAA probably has the strictest rules, because at least most pro leagues, you can bet on other leagues. You just can't bet on the one you're in. But the NCAA, you're not allowed to bet on anything related to sports. So it is interesting that so many people are like tied to college sports because of these betting lines, and then those athletes themselves can't even do anything.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that in and of itself should, like, tell you. Like, Notre Dame's whole men's swim team got suspended earlier this year for, I don't even think it was, like, real gambling in a sense. It was just something they were doing as a group, and it wasn't even on swimming, but they got, their whole team got suspended. And it's like, so it's taken very, very seriously in some of these situations, which maybe, you know, I can understand why it should be. Again, if these athletes aren't even necessarily of age to be gambling, like, there is, you know, legal consequences there. But it's, you know, that same, it's just like you said, that sharp disconnect between this fan and this viewing experience and what the athletes are doing and the way that they're being, like, kind of like you said, pawns in this marketing and revenue generating game of sports books and sports betting companies. Like, against their will, almost, or without, you know, without that being something that they would desire. And again, it's not normal. This is not the norm. This is just the way that America does it.
For this week's Fun Friday, Claire and I are going to be playing a game that we call Wavelength. And so one of us will pick a number 1 through 10 in our head, and then the other person gets to ask 4 questions to try to figure out what that number is. So that might sound a little vague right now. You'll understand as we go, but the questions will all be sports related, so play along at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a game that's easier once you see it being done or hear it being done.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to ask Jenna 4 questions, and after each of my questions, she's going to give me an answer in that category that will hopefully help me figure out what number she's thinking of, and if we're on the same wavelength, then I'll be able to figure it out. So give me a sports city.
In terms of atmosphere?
Yes. Or like, yeah, kind of however you want, but I was thinking in terms of atmosphere and maybe how they're viewed, you know, in general.
In the U.S.
Okay. I'm going to go with Seattle.
Okay. So, listener, also, hopefully you can kind of see how that was helpful. So, theoretically, the answer Jenna just gave me corresponds with the number she's thinking in her head. So just to kind of also think out loud my thoughts, you know, I would think a city like New York or maybe even like Boston or I don't even know, like one of those where it's like a big, massive sports city where people are super passionate and stuff like that would be on the higher end, like towards the 10. But I know LA, for example, is the one that we've used a lot where we're like, this city is like kind of sucks. Would be more towards the 1. And so Seattle was an interesting one because I think that they definitely have professional teams, but you don't really ever hear about like Seattle transplants or like casual fans of Seattle sports teams. So I'm thinking more on the lower end. Like I think off the top of my head, I was thinking like maybe 3, which I'm like closing my eyes, so I'm not looking at Jenna's reaction. So I have no clues about where it's going. But so that's one thing off my head right now is a 3. And so I'm going to ask a couple more questions. Give me an Olympic, I guess, like, ones people enjoy watching, like, a cool would be 10, like, not so cool would be, like, a 1.
Okay.
Or, like, one that, like, embodies Olympics, like, you know, like, yeah.
Okay.
Would be, like, a 10 versus, like, a 1.
1 would be kind of embarrassing to admit that you're, like, going to the Olympics for this sport kind of thing.
Or just, like, who – like, it's not one of the features. Like, it's gotcha, there. Gotcha. People don't really care.
Okay.
I can't give an example because that would help. Yeah,
right.
So.
No, I understand.
Yeah. I'm going to go with archery.
That's also a good one, I think. So, like, because I was thinking, like, for example, like, gymnastics or – like swimming maybe even would be like up at the top because that's like ones in, you know, in the Olympics that people watch a lot of the time. Archery is like an interesting one because it's very niche to the Olympics, but it's also like nobody is staying up to watch the archery. So I'm still thinking in that 3 range. Like, so I'm saying like 2 to 3 range. I feel like college football team, and it doesn't even have to be this season per se, but just like kind of in terms of iconicity, you know, like overall college football. But theoretically you only need to know 10 to put them on kind of a scale.
This is true. However, I think the 10 I would know are like in the 9-10 range, which we've established. With the limited football knowledge that I have and, like, hear about, I would say Purdue.
I'm no expert, so, you know, it's not. But, yeah, Purdue, well, like I said, I think we've definitely also established we're not in the upper half of the, of the number scale here. And with
Purdue, I'm also still thinking that.
I think I'm going. I'm thinking maybe just still three or.
I guess out of the last like 10 years,
mm-hmm.
the headliner being Maroon 5.
Oh, I was actually thinking of this one in my head as one that I.
That was not a good one.
I honestly like, I might. Because there's honestly, in the past 10 years, there's not been two. So we have like Maroon, Archery, and
Seattle.
I'm dropping it to a 2, and that's gonna be my final answer. We're saying 2 out of 10.
Okay. Ugh, it was a 3.
Dang it,
we were dead on from the start.
Ugh.
And I was like, I don't know how to get her to stay at 3.
That was, yeah, that's about as good as you could have done.
Yeah, the hard part with the halftime, it's a good question. But I would say that there are actually a decent amount of really good performances in like the last 10 years that we can remember. And so I was like, that one wasn't terrible. Like, I think individually the artists are good.
That one I didn't like.
Yeah.
The only Justin Timberlake I also didn't love. I was trying to think of like which ones would have been worse.
I felt like that one to me was worse than Maroon 5.
Yeah. So in my head I was like Justin Timberlake, Maroon 5. And I was like, I can't think of another one in the past 10 years that, I mean, Shakira and J-Lo were okay.
Yeah, exactly. Them for me was like a 4 to 5. So I feel like that was too high. But I was like, maybe, I don't know. So
that was as good as you could.
I was like, The Weeknd wasn't really sure. Like,
oh, I loved The Weeknd.
Yeah, I knew that you liked The Weeknd, so I couldn't say that one.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was as good as you could have done.
Yeah,
honestly.
So
that's not too bad. That's not too terrible. No,
I gave it my best shot.
Yeah, you did. I probably could have done better than like the college football question, for example. But like,
I think that one we were a little bit of lost causes for that.
That's
so.
Okay. All right.
Maybe not that one.
All right. Now we're going to switch it around. So same.
I have to think of my questions.
And I've got a number. And so Jenna's, again, going to ask me or give me categories. And we're going to see if we can get this to match.
Ballpark snack.
Okay. Let me think. We've got like popcorn, hot dogs, nachos. Like what other stuff do you eat? I guess like ice cream. Cracker Jacks, I guess. Salted peanuts, that kind of vibe. So I would say I'm going to go with a solid, like, just like buttered popcorn.
Okay. That's very, I'd say, middle of the road, like nothing spectacular. But you also you can randomly crave popcorn. So it's not like my first choice, probably not my second either, but it's like fine for me. So for me, that's I'll try not to reuse your questions, but I do really like this one. I think it's good for grounding. So Sports City.
Mm-hmm. I'm picturing right now in my head, I'm doing my best to picture a map of the United States and
geography is hard for.
But also we just read through a list of the cities for the FIFA Club World Cup this summer, and so I think that's also helping me with some grounding here. But I'm gonna say Philadelphia.
Okay. Philly's up there for their vibe. I hate, but like they do have one of the best sports atmospheres in the country, I would argue, honestly. Even if it is trashy.
Even if we don't condone it.
So that pulls it up. I would probably go, but we'll do, since there's 10 teams, we'll do Formula One team.
Oh, that's actually a really good ranking. Is this in terms of kind of everything?
We'll do everything, not like, because if we just
it's not
did,
just the championship.
Yeah, if we just did championship.
For which there's a very real
Yeah, for which
one
it
to
would
ten.
Tell me exactly what number it is. That'd be great,
but
I think that's a little cheating.
No.
We'll go with like fan perceptions of them.
Yeah. This is kind of tricky. Because, it is. So try not to think exactly on like a 1 to 10 scale,
right.
Just because, but I would say like Aston Martin.
Interesting. We are all over the place. I don't think we're on the same wavelength at all. Because to me, popcorn, so much better than Aston Martin. Philly sucks, but atmosphere-wise, they have one of the best ones.
Well, this actually having it on 1 to 10 is a little tougher because it's kind of like you don't want to think, like, if, because it does make you try to think, like, in a direct ranking, which is honestly almost a little bit tougher than if you
see,
have, like,
I go ranges,
to
be
from.
Honest. Like,
ranges.
Like, when you say, okay, I know we're quantifying it, but when you say, like, Aston Martin, I don't think, like, okay, this one is, like, above this one and blah, 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 blah. Which I guess maybe for this question, it would be helpful. So maybe I'll do that right now. But but in general, I normally don't think of it that way. I normally am just like, are we on the same wavelength? Yeah. But I guess maybe I could, like, logic myself out of this one.
So we have Popcorn, Philly, and Aston Martin.
Yeah, which is crazy. But I would say in terms of, like, who fans like more over Aston Martin, like, they're certainly not hated. They're just kind of there. So that definitely brings me back down a bit because I would say, like, doesn't really even matter the order, but, like, Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, and Red Bull are... Honestly, I think... But I'm not feeling very confident about this one. This probably isn't the best color combinations on a jersey.
Oh, wow.
Or, like, yeah. No, on a jersey.
So, like, two color combinations?
Yeah, like, two or three. Because, like, you know, we've talked about, like, you like Pittsburgh because they have all the same colors. Yeah. Like, things like that. So.
Yeah, what's a good... Let's see. That one is kind of tough. Let me think of... Let me go through my color. So, sometimes teams have a particular scheme, but, like, for example, because I'm not going to use this one, the Lakers, where it's, like, yellow and purple. It's, like, obviously super iconic because it's the Lakers, but it's not something that's, like, ubiquitous or that, like, anybody could do because it's, let's say, like, the Chicago Bulls. So I guess that's really, like, a red and white and black, or, like, a red and black or red and white kind of. With red being the primary color and then there being no secondary color other than red and or black and white.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we're definitely not on the same wavelength because I actually really like that. And that doesn't help me whatsoever for what I've received before. So there's something that is, like, not the same for us.
Popcorn, Philly, Aston Martin, and Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, my disconnect is really with, like, Philly and popcorn and, like, this popcorn and Aston Martin. I don't know. The popcorn's throwing me off. I mean, I think that's a solid color combo. I don't think it's anything fancy. I mean, yeah, only having a primary. I'm really at a loss, but I'm just going to go with my gut and go with 5.
Yeah, that was
yeah.
That was a rough round. It was actually 7.
Okay,
and I think the popcorn was, for whatever reason, like, because for me, like, a 5 is, like, I wouldn't order it.
But 5 is average.
I know, but I think popcorn's above average out of the things you can get.
Okay,
like, there are not many things I would get above popcorn. Because I think it's, like, a solid classic snack. It's not super hot.
Right. I knew salty. That you liked it. I just think that
it's you can eat 5,000 pounds of it and, like, not worry. Yes. But yeah, that was tough. And then the other thing was like Aston Martin. Like, I was, like, not sure if that's a good one, but I was like, if I were to say any of the top 4 teams, I was like, I felt like, because 7 was such a tough one with there being, like, the top 4
I'd probably
four
go
teams.
With Red Bull.
I was thinking of doing Red Bull, but I was like,
because I think, like,
but for
everyone,
me, Aston Martin was, like, right below that. So out of 6, but
that's fair. Yeah, I think I would do. I probably would have done Red Bull. Maybe Mercedes, but probably Red Bull.
Because it was clear for me, like, Mercedes, Ferrari, McLaren were
3.
And then I was kind of like Aston, Red Bull. I felt like everybody else was just, you know,
yeah,
not performing well enough for it to merit a 7. So, But yeah, so that was a little tough, but
yeah.
Oh well.
Philly's not a bad one for seven.
Yeah, seven is kind of a tough one to get.
It
has to be good but not great.
Right.
And then
right.
Good but not bad. It's a tough in the middle there, but I like playing that game though.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I gotta get a little better.
We both do. that was not ideal.
Thank you for listening to the 14th episode of The Athlete and the NARP. We hope you enjoyed our discussion about the sports betting landscape, as well as our Fun Friday segment where Claire and I played Wavelength.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at The Athlete and the NARP. You can contact us by email at theathleteandthenarp@gmail.com with content suggestions, clarifications, or questions. Until next time, I'm Claire Fenton.
And I'm Jenna Daly.
And this has been
The Athlete and the NARP.